Welcome to our Team Roundtable podcast, where we explore the hot topic of the week here at CRA Resources. And just a reminder for those tuning in for the first time, CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. So let's get started. Angela, what is the hot topic we've discussed this week?
We're going to talk about classical training. You know, classical training is an interesting one, especially for those individuals that have either been in the industry for a cajillion years or those individuals who were trying to figure out how to crack the nut of getting into the industry. You know, the barrier to entry into the CRA role is still very elusive. I had a discussion with the ACRP and some of the efforts that they're doing there to better define that and then, of course, broadcast it. But with that being said, when you're looking at resumes, any hiring entity that might be looking at resumes, what is a hiring manager looking for in terms of your classical training, your first CRA gig? How did you learn? Who taught you? Was it a Cadillac of training, or was it your brother Bubba or your wife or your mom or your whatever? What was the approach that it took, and how has it landed you where you are today?
I think that's a great topic. A lot of things we've been talking about lately on our other podcasts and roundtables have been, you know, the pathway to becoming a CRA and how kind of ambiguous that can be sometimes. Correct. And how there isn't necessarily one straight path. So I love that we're talking about this because there are a lot of ways that you can start becoming a CRA. And so I think it's wonderful that we really focus on, once you do become a CRA, how does that start look? And, you know, making sure that you have all of the foundations of the makings of what you need to be successful in the role. Mm-hmm. So perfect. So do we want to talk about what good classical training is then? Do we want to start there?
Well, perfect resume for me, perfect resume is someone who has experience at a site and then they move into a big CRO and they have some nice tenure at a big CRO as a permanent employee. And then they shift from there. That's perfect foundations. Here's the problem with that. Fake CRAs and those organizations that are selling resumes and offering employment verification and reference checks, that's the resume that they're selling, is 4 years experience at Sarah Cannon or MD Anderson or, you know, whatever site is well known and reputed. And then they move to PPD for 5 years and then they're still a CRA too, but then they move to somewhere else. But that's the reason why they're offering those resumes, because they are perfect. It is the perfect scenario. So with that being said, if you have that perfect background, it should be beautiful, but that's not always the case. Is it? I mean, Natalie, Jenny, you guys jump in here. What are y'all seeing whenever it comes to the imperfect resumes, but that are still okay as it relates to having a classical training that we would look at and really respect and appreciate?
I agree. Those perfect resumes are the ones that they're selling a lot now for those fraudulent folks. But when you get those resumes where it doesn't have that perfect, you know, the one that we like to see from a big size CRO or a big or not even a big company, but like a company with lots of years of experience, you can tell that's where they got it started. Or if they started off as a contractor or just started off in an unorthodox way, is to speak what they did during that time to have gained that experience when they speak to a recruiter or a hiring manager. If you don't give the details that you learned, and it could be simple details as far as, yes, I was a contractor, but I grasped all the knowledge that they gave me, tools that they used, or that they told me to use and so forth, that will show that you don't have to have that perfect path to get, you know, to get an interview because you had that experience with the company for many years. And that's where you can tell you got that classical CRA training. It's just speaking about what you learned during that time.
Mm-hmm. It's real experience.
Yeah.
And that you have a love for research, that you're just not going in saying, I'm going to work a year at this company, I'm going to leave to go somewhere else because they'll pay me more money, to really show that they're interested in learning and how to be a CRA.
Right.
As opposed to just jumping around just for their own career growth.
Yeah. And a tangent. I mean, I guess it gets a tangent, but this is something that I get on the soapbox for all the time when I have youngins reach out to me saying, hey, I'm looking to move into contracting, and they have like 2 years experience as a CRA somewhere. And I'm like, no, you need to stay where you are, because if you want to be a more competitive contractor, let's get some foundations first.
Right.
You know, you got a year and a half at IQV. I think that's beautiful. IQV has got the Cadillac of training over there. Wonderful. But don't leave after a year and a half. Get some more diversity as a perm somewhere. IQV preferably. Gain 3 years there before you branch out into contracting or something like that. I think what I see whenever it comes to classical training is that folks want to get from A to Z so quickly that they don't appreciate what they can be learning in their foundational opportunity.
I agree with that. I would say that when I have conversations with folks about, you know, tell me about why you left, and they'll say, oh, you know, to advance my career, which is, there's nothing wrong with going somewhere else to get a promotion or, you know, getting more experience that you may have not gotten at your current position, but have you been able to take advantage of learning everything that you can in your current? And you almost have to kind of think ahead. Think of the bigger picture as far as like, okay, I'm only going to be here for a year and a half, and I got what I needed just so I can move up to another to get more compensation or get promoted. But did you really grasp all the knowledge? Because if you did, then you can use that down the road, you know, and gain that advancement down the road because you just were a little bit more patient with your current position. If that makes sense.
Well, and to your point, you will be a much better manager if you have those solid foundations. I mean, the folks that we talk to when we gather references for people, I mean, those managers that do the best work are the ones that have done the CRA role to begin with. They have solid foundations there, and they can speak to every issue that their direct report's having, and they know the whole chain from start to finish of what needs to be done and the issues that could happen at the site level and, you know, all along the way. So you will be more successful in your management career if you have solid CRA foundations as well.
Well, but here's the other thing, if we piggyback on this, is because I agree with you, Natalie, and Jenny, you've probably seen this too, is where you ask, well, why did you leave IQV? Well, because I wanted an advancement. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll admit that it's money or what have you, but then they move to PPD at the same level. Okay, mm-hmm. let's just call it BS. They didn't leave for advancement because there was no promotion there. There was another reason why you left. Why don't you just be honest with us and tell us what it is? So, I mean, that is the other aspect of it. Now, if you left IQV because of an advancement, then that means you landed at PPD or somewhere else as a CRA 2 or a senior CRA or whatever the next level was. And if it's a lateral move, then there's no, where's the advancement? And, you know, we've had those individuals that have been at the smaller companies that have said, I just didn't feel like there was room to grow. Now, I get that whenever you're at an IQV or a PPD or whatever, because there's such big companies, sometimes it is harder to find a growth path within those larger organizations, but sometimes it isn't. And if you've only been there for a year and a half, have you really given it every opportunity to grow if that's what your real goal is? It goes back to what is your story? What is your path? What are your objectives? And what choices are you making to get you there? And is it clear whenever we're looking at your resume that we can read your resume like we read a novel and we can see what that career trajectory is that you've personally mapped out?
I love that. That's such a great point. So speaking about what good classical training is, let's pivot to what classical training isn't. Maybe some examples we've seen of where you think you have the foundations, but in our eyes, it isn't quite the situation that we're looking for to be able to quantify that quality.
What do you think, Miss Jenny? What have you seen in the resume that you think, I'm going to really have to poke at this?
Well, when someone starts out as a CRA contracting and you don't see where they've started as a permanent CRA and could have gotten that classical training in like a training program or CRA Academy or something, and they just kind of started out as a contractor, it makes you wonder, well, how did they learn this? Like those first jobs, did they know what they were doing? Were they doing it correctly? Because you don't see where they could have learned how to do it correctly from their resume.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you that are listening, you know, there's, if you start looking at employment types and the way the government wants you to classify employees, you've got salaried employees, which is a professional employee. And that's the reason why typically a CRA is employed at a salary level, because it's classified as a professional position. Ideally, even at the entry level, you're supposed to have some basic understanding to where you're not supposed to get a lot of guidance on show up to work, clock in, here's your list of tasks to do today, you know, that type of thing. And then you have the 1099 consulting. So now if you're a 1099 consultant, you're supposed to have the foundations already. The only thing you're supposed to know as an independent consultant, the only thing that you're supposed to be trained as an independent consultant is the protocol and the company's specific SOPs and maybe their systems. You're already supposed to know how to be a CRA if you're a contract CRA at the 1099 level. And I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it, Jenny? Is mm-hmm. all of a sudden yeah. it's like they just woke up one day, they were an English teacher one day, and then they wake up the next day and bam, they're a 1099, they're an independent consultant working for a company, whatever. And you're like, okay, how did you get there? How did you learn this? Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So what steps do we take whenever we see that? Because we don't automatically just say, yeah, we're not going to talk to you, because we've worked with people that have that. But what do we then look at, or what steps do we take to vet that their foundations are valid if they didn't get the perfect? I mean, Natalie, you touched on that a little bit, but let's talk about that somewhat. What would we be looking for? What would our clients be looking for if someone has taken the less than classical approach to learning the CRA role?
I would say to disclose like the tasks and what you did or what you learned during that time. Mm-hmm. Telling me that, oh, I gained that experience because I was working under this person, or I was shadowing this person who had their own LLC or S Corp. No, no, no. Our clients are no, that's a big no, no. Mm-hmm. Now, if you started off that way, and then like a year or two, you got an opportunity to work for a CRO or a company where they gave you that training, then let's have a discussion. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But mm-hmm. if that was your only training and you didn't gain anything after that and you just kept on going as a contractor and you had your own contracts, that's a big, I don't know what the right word is, but I can't think of
red
the word.
Recruiters scare easily.
Yes.
Like, my mom showed me how to do this job.
We've seen that before. Mm-hmm. Way back in the day, I had that. And I had actually recruited the mother. She was phenomenal. And she had classical training. And she had trained her son. And how she had started it out was she had helped him. She had asked him to help with some basics. It just started out with do my expense reports, help book my travel, help do this, that, or the other. And then she was having him send the follow-up letters. And then, you know, he got to shadow her on some visits. And that was his classical training. And to Natalie's point, that's not okay. And the reason why it's not okay, here's the thing. This is the reason why Angela doesn't believe it's okay, is because one person's view of the way clinical research should be done is flawed. It's always going to be flawed, because not only are you teaching them what you know to be true, which you do. I mean, this lady was phenomenal. I've already said she was great, but she's also taught him bad habits. So he didn't get to learn from an IQVIA or a PPD where there's a more structured program that has been tried and true. I mean, we're talking about those tires have been kicked for years. IQVIA continues to improve their program. PPD, Par Excel, Icon, they continue to develop. Cineos, oh my gosh, at the program they've got, it's incredible. They continue to improve that training program. And it's not based off of one person's opinion. It's based off of a program that's been established and continually driven to more and more improvement levels across the years. That's why classical training is so much more important. And that's why we hedge away from the my brother Bubba let me come out and shadow him, and that's how I got started. Great, that gave you the love for clinical research, but where did you get your classical training from? Because if you tell me brother Bubba, I scare easily. I'm not really sure I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well, and the checks and balances too, you know, because like we've seen a situation where it's like husband and wife teams where one of them has been a professional, been a contract CRA for years, and the other one is just getting their feet wet. And so then they, you know, they kind of work as a team. But, you know, where's the checks and balances with that? That's a really important point, Angela.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
well,
Carrie.
We can't trust the senior CRA either. So if I put a senior CRA on a project and they're giving some of their work that I've hired them to do to their little brother to help them, then, you know, that's a big concern. I won't work with senior CRAs in those types of situations.
Yeah, if they're known to foster that, because our clients hand select the CRAs and we identify the person that's going to work on that project. So if other people start showing up, that's a problem. That's for sure.
It's almost like thinking of it away as the CRA is looking at patient charts. They're making sure everything is a compliance, you know. Think about it like if a nurse got trained by a physician assistant or something like that, and now they're treating you for something. Do you want someone that got some training through a physician assistant, you know, in the doctor's office, or do you want someone that actually went to a school to learn about the ins and outs of the nursing field and looking at your charts and figuring out what could be wrong? It's almost like that.
I love that comparison.
Yeah. And the same on the hiring manager side, you know, do hiring managers want folks that have just dabbled or have that experience and have that classical training? That's exactly right. Go ahead, Angela.
No, I love that. I love that comparison because you're absolutely right. And that really does kind of further drive home the point of classical training is really something that's a bit more structured. And again, I mean, you know, I don't want anyone to think that we're going on record to say that we would never work with anyone who doesn't have that perfect foundational classical training. So if you did wake up one day and decide to become a contractor and you had a venue to enter into this universe via a mom or a husband or a brother or whatever colleague, the question then that we would be looking at is, okay, what's your tenure look like? You know, how long have you done this and how many, and, you know, because a lot of times we'll see the lack of classical training and then we'll see 3 month contract, 2 month contract, 4 month contract. And let me try a little bit of perm and it's 6 months and then they bail and then they're this, that, or the other, and they're all over the place. Alternatively, we see it to where they start out that way and then they really stick, like as a consultant for Boeinger for 12 years or, you know, that type of thing. Now, that I love because then they have then taken the passion that they learned from the foundations of their brother Bubba and then they moved it into a more structured environment and filled the holes with the knowledge that they needed to fill the holes with.
Well, wonderful. I think this has been such a great discussion. I'm so sorry we are out of time. We could go on this for so much longer, but thank you so much, team. I think we got some great information out there for all you folks who are getting in to this field. I think it's so important to consider what's your foundations. So I hope this has been really helpful for everybody who is listening. If you want to explore more of our content, you can visit creresources.com/blog to check out our latest articles and additional podcasts. You can also sign up to get this content delivered to your inbox and feel free to reach out at creresources.com for more information about our firm.